at the rate of 25% to 30% annually. In June 1969, the Regents of the University of Minnesota established a Department of Indian Studies. It is believed to be the first Indian Studies program in the country to have departmental status. Offers a Bachelor of Arts degree in American Indian Studies, with Chippewa fulfilling the language requirement. Even outside the Indian Studies departments, Chippewa may use to satisfy language requirements for a degree. Dakota would soon be added. A new paragraph. There is a considerable effort into upgrading Indian education. For example, an Indian director for Indian education, all Indian education supervisory committee to the State Department of Education and to urban school districts, an annual upward bound program in Minneapolis junior high schools, a tutorial program for younger Minneapolis Indian children, and the Department of Indian Studies at the University of Minnesota. There have been several national Indian education conferences, but problems that still loom large are the Indian student dropout rate. Indians are aware that much schooling as is now exists as destructive to their Indian identity, but in order to share the advantages of modern civilization to achieve better living conditions, employment and the like, Indians acknowledge the need for education. Many reservations offer scholarships to Indians off their reservation, on their reservation, for higher education. The Indians may not be profiting from their school experience, but it is not because they lack intelligence. American Indians of today have about the same innate equipment for learning as have the white children of Americans. That's a summary statement from the survey. Arthur Gabo contributed the following. We operated all Indian schools on the reservations. But about 2 years ago, except about 1970, then the Minnesota law stepped in and said that we had to consolidate to meet with the state law requirements of integrated school system. We could not have an all-Indian school at this time. We don't have an all-Indian school anymore. It is a good thing, maybe, because today, as I see it, Indian kids are going to these schools the dropout rate is at least over 90% of the dropout rate of other students. In 1970, we had the biggest graduation class, which was four kids graduated. And that is in 1970. They graduated from high school. I don't know what the problem is with these kids dropping out. I think it is either a family problem, also the school system's problem. You find too many kids say that they read and say that in their books and teachers say that the Indians are savages, that they invented scalping, they invented all this type of thing, and these are some of the things that I think the kids would get turned off by. And today the kids are starting to realize this. They don't know where, they don't really know where or whom to believe anymore. At this point, teachers tell their kids to do their thing in believing, and then they tell them that the Indians didn't do this. And then they go back to school and say, hey, you shouldn't believe that what your parents tell you. It's like everything else. What is written on black and on white, that's what you believe in. But you can't blame the teachers at this time either, because they have a lot of problems that they have to go through, different changes that they don't have control of. They should have a human relations type of training. And it's gotten to the point now to be recertified. They have to have human relations training, 60 hours of it. I was told that we either had to consolidate with the Onemi schools, or our school would be closed down, or to build a high school for ourselves. But we don't have that kind of money to build a high school. We don't have enough students to take care of on the high school level, so we had to go along with the consolidation. And when we consolidated with Onemi, this Title IV education program came into effect. We found out about it, and where we could say we want those teachers to be certified, they have to have the human relations training. So we presented this to the school board. And the school board said, do you think we have $52,000 worth of trouble? And I think we did have. And in fact, I still do think we have that problem, because we still have the dropout rate at 90%. It isn't changed. So they said, all right, we'll look at it. And then they finally had to make a special trip down to Washington, and the hand carried the proposal. And when it did come, it went fine through the school board. And right now, that's what the Title IV is for. That's where I'm at right now. I'm not working for Title IV. I'm working for the reservation as a reservation administrator. Are you? It would be like the chief was in the earlier day. It's really an honorary type of chief. He's not a full-fledged chief as he used to have them before. The chief that we have here, his name is Melvin Eagle. His great-great-grandfather was the chief of the Moose tribe here, of the tribe here. I don't know how long the RVCs have been in existence, but I would say as long back as I can remember. About 1946, I can remember my grandfather was one of the RVC members, and another old man whose name was Jim Big Wolf was also one of the members. One of the reasons that there's so much confusion about education, I think, is that in the early day, the children were taken away from their parents and put at a school a long ways from home, where they were not allowed to speak the Chippewa language, and where they were not where they were told to forget all of their Indian heritage. I think that today helps them to want to be identified as Indians. Paragraph. The integration of Indian schools was in 1970. But that year, 4 graduated from the Onemi High School. Arthur said he thinks it's the textbooks that say the Indians are savages and so on that turns the young people off, and so they drop out. And the teachers don't know any better, and so they just let it go by. The children are hurt. A new paragraph. Indian children of compulsory school age at 7 to 16 in Minnesota are attending school regularly. They attend a classified high school if they so desire, and must attend a school until they are 16. Most schools are provided with visitor education equipment and materials. There are texts and reference books are provided free. An excellent noon lunch is provided free to eligible Indian pupils, with resulting improvement in the general health of the pupils. The school buildings seem to be well maintained, both inside and outside. High school enrollment has improved considerably, and the attendance too. More are completing high school each year. 2/3 of each class go to the advanced studies with scholarship help. Since 1940, about 20 schools with mostly Indians enrolled have been closed, and the pupils are transported to nearby larger schools. All schools are in session 9 months, and the school day is 6 hours long, except in grades 1 and 2. Each teacher of Indian holds a valid teacher certificate issued by the State Department of Education. A full-time guidance counselor was added to the State Department of Education administrative staff in 1958 for the purpose of working with the Indian high school pupils in an effort to improve attendance and to reduce the number of dropouts. I'm going now to federal agencies. The Aboriginal Chippewa were a hunting and gathering people. They never had things in abundance. It wasn't an economy of abundance, but it was sufficient. In the spring and summer, there was maple sugaring and berrying and wild rice harvesting in the fall, and this bound large groups of families and friends together. So they had this community life. And during it, they danced and sang and had activities of the Grand Medicine Society. It was a socializing affair. Families shared and worked together, but it lasted only as long as the short summer of Minnesota. New paragraph. And money is a scarcity among the Chippewa. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs no longer provides welfare for all Indians. The state and local governments have not as yet accepted in practice that Indians are citizens and entitled to equal treatment in all respects to other citizens. In 1960, it was reported that the total Indian population, for instance, of Minnesota, received some form of public assistance. On the federal level, there are now services available to all citizens, such as under the Social Security Act, is old age assistance, aid to dependent children, aid to the blind, aid to the permanently and totally disabled. Then there's a surplus commodity. See, Mary, I'm just copy what I have indicated on the sheet marked capital A, marked in blue. Paragraph. It seems that the only reservation that has the reservation business enterprise where the reservation business enterprise exists and subtracts to big business, like IBM, Honeywell, and so forth. The Mille Lacs Reservation is the only one that has the contracts. Paragraph. It seems that there is an urge for the Indians to run their own affairs. They're still running into problems with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and still they say that they want to run their affairs. The reservation also has their own water sanitation outfit. They run their own affairs regarding that. It says the Water Sanitation Association. They have their own water and sewage system. They are now trying to get funds from the Public Health Service, which comes under the AB. Omit that last sentence, Mary. Again, Arthur did not think the relocation program was a help to the Indians. They put them someplace, they gave them a job for 2 weeks, and then there wasn't anything more for them to do, so they started to hitchhike back home. And that was all right for single people, but families, it was completely more difficult for them. They couldn't hitchhike back, so they couldn't see why they had to go to California, Chicago, or Ohio to get training when they could have had it right here in the state of Minnesota, which they're doing now. This is one of the changes the tribal government has done. They're starting their training programs right here in the state of Minnesota, and we don't have to send them clear to Denver, Colorado, New Mexico, or any place like that. Then, a new paragraph, there is the Indian Community Action Project, parentheses, capital I, capital C, capital A, capital P. The programs provide unavailable services in the areas of adult, vocational, and consumer education, Head Start, home builders training, senior citizen services, youth employment and activities, health education and homemaker service, legal services, and economic industrial development. Mary, copy B just as it is, B in blue. New paragraph. Then there is the Indian Claims Commission, capital I, capital C, capital C. Again, Mary, copy what I have indicated as capital C. New paragraph. The man who heads the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington is an Indian, but he's directly under the Secretary of the Interior, Secretary Morton. He's really like an assistant to him. Secretary of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This is quoting Arthur now. I saw him at a national tribe and association meeting. He said there that he would listen to Indian people and see what they wanted. And when the Indian people went to ask him questions, he said he didn't have any time to answer any kind of questions. So, well, he says one thing and then he goes and does another. And the Indian, the BIA head, there are others who could fill some of these places, but many of them are held by civil service appointments and they can't be removed. New paragraph. Services to Indians from the federal government began as treaty conditions. Money for land bought from the Indians was placed in trust in the United States Treasury, and either the principal or the interest originally used according to the treaty provided food, clothing, livestock, farm implements, cash payments, settling traders' claims, and the pay of blacksmiths, teachers, doctors, and other skilled employees. When these funds were exhausted, gratuitous appropriations were increasingly made to permit continuance of the various federal services. Frequently, Congress stipulated that such expenditure should be repaid to the United States Treasury out of the future income of the tribes concerned. But the Indians never really had enough money to pay. Legislation provided for the adjustment or cancellation of many of these debts, but many are still deducted as offsets in settling claims. The Indian Claims Commission, however, has recently ceased levying an assessment against the Indians to cover past appropriations for food and for needs occasioned by reservation life. New paragraph. Congress now determines the federal responsibility to Indians. Sets limitations on services for which the Bureau of Indian Affairs is often blamed. Paragraph. Reservation Indians, regardless of degree of Indianness, receive direct health care from the Indian Health Service and share in federal programs for employment, education, police training, and other poverty programs available to all citizens. New paragraph. Health services to reservation Indians, where the responsibility of the BIA until 1955, when the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare took over, creating the Indian Health Service within the Public Health Service. New paragraph. The Indian Health Service provides care for reservation Indians directly through hospitals, health centers, field clinics, and indirectly through contracts with other health agencies. Its direct service is free to persons of Indian descent belonging to the Indian community and is usually made available to any Indian needing care who presents himself. New paragraph. There's a National Council on Indian Opportunities. It was created by President Johnson in 1968. The Indian Summit was a milestone in giving the Indian people a voice at the top level of government. But under the council is composed of 6 Indian members and heads of 7 departments and agencies involved with Indians. The departments of the Interior, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health, Education and Welfare, Housing and Urban Development, the Office of Economic Opportunity. New paragraph, the Community Action Program. It employs all the secretaries and also the Head Start people. This program is to have a baseball, softball teams, and Head Start staff. It was part of a recreation program. They don't come under that. They don't fund those anymore. We also have the emergency food program. That comes under the Community Action Program also. It's really for emergency use only. There is on the reservation also a community health representative. It's really under program four, under the Community Action Program. The Community Action Program takes care of paying rent for the building and lighting. A recreation committee which consists of local Indian people. They take care mostly of young kids, elementary, preschool, and kindergarten. And we've got a new position now, and that's an Indian youth counselor. He will be headquartered here, and he will take care of this area here, and also some of the outlying areas. His main purpose is, if a kid runs into troubles, and the trouble gets thrown, and the kid gets thrown into delinquency, or has to go to court or something, he has to go in and make sure the kid gets another chance. This program is funded by the EOP, the Economic Opportunity Program. Then we have the new paragraph. There is a Title IV program. It doesn't have anything to do with all the others. It's federally funded. The money is channeled through the reservation, the RVC. Arthur is the one that's in charge. He is the administrator of all of these. None of these programs was in existence in 1930. They came into existence about 1959 or 1960. All the reservations have the CAP program. That's a community action program. But Arthur wasn't sure that the others did, that they had the other programs. But most of them did. Each reservation has a community health representative, either one or two. Coming back to the Title IV program, is a program where teachers can take, instead of having them go all the way down to St. Cloud, they can take it here, where it isn't going to cost them half. as much, and they can, they don't have to spend money on travel back and forth. There should be at least 50 or 60 Indian people that have taken the human relations training. Ten of these will be on the Mille Lacs Reservation. They're being trained, or ten, no, let's see, that's not correct. Human Relations Director at St. Cloud Junior College has applied for 10 Indian people here who will be highly trained in human relations so they can go out and give human relations training in any area or school district where they would like to have them in, so they can go out and do the training themselves. But again, these 10 people that are going to train that do not come under the Title IV program for the time being. They are under, now, it is a one-year program that will cease on June 30th. They will not be having this program here anymore. The Title IV director is Chester Leonard. He is white from Philadelphia. We could find no Indian prepared to be the leader. The leader of that program, and this Chester Leonard was a VISTA worker. He had worked among the Chippewa farther north. But we're slowly preparing Indians. From here, we've got about three or four kids that are going to college now. Arthur then went on to say that their museum specimens of the old culture are no longer available among the Chippewa, but they're found in museums. However, he would like to have everything back on the reservation. New paragraph. Arthur then went on to say that there is a community representative, a woman whose position was created about 5 or 6 years ago. Her job is basically to go out and do home visits on just particular reservations and to help out in sanitation type help and to help make better living conditions inside the home. She's also more or less a nurse. Maggie Sanders is the present community health representative. It's a good program. It's funded by the federal government. New paragraph. Then there is the emergency food program, which is exactly what it says, and they work with the welfare department. The Indians have to say about how much money should be spent, but the representative works closely with the welfare department, and she also goes out and tells what kind of foods to buy. She's like a nutritionist. A new paragraph. Arthur did not know through what group the women that wanted a garden plowed had to go. He thought it might be the Mille Lacs Extension Department would come out. Now, there are four programs then, he summarized. Action Program, Title IV Program, Community Health Program, and Emergency Food Program. A new paragraph. There is practically no commercial fishing going on under